Welcome to Project I Am with Dr. David Schloss. Grab your coffee, green tea, or smoothie. Find your favorite listening spot or put on your walking shoes. Ready? Let's go.
Hello, I'm Dr. David Schloss, and welcome to Project I Am. You know, in the realm of relationships, there are tales of love that are often not neatly wrapped in ribbons or predictable endings, but rather encased in complexity, filled with challenges, and ultimately marked by courageous transformations. One such story is that of Diane and Jack, a couple whose marriage was tested by infidelity. Through an intimate interview with Diane, we delve into the unraveling of their relationship, the bravery in choosing to rebuild, and the insights gleaned from their journey toward healing. Before we begin this episode, I want to share that Diane is a pseudonym, and this podcast was suggested by Diane with the intent purpose of helping other couples in this situation navigate their way through. So before we even begin, I want to express gratitude to Diane for her courage in doing this podcast with me. I'm sure you're ready to get into it, but before we do, here's the disclaimer.
This podcast is created for educational and inspirational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional mental health services, diagnosis, or treatment. Although Dr. Schloss is a licensed mental health professional, listening to this podcast does not create a therapeutic relationship. The content shared here is intended to support your personal development and mental wellness journey, but it should not be considered medical or psychological advice tailored to your individual situation. If you are in need of therapeutic support, please seek help from a qualified mental health provider in your area. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please contact a local crisis line or emergency services immediately. Views expressed by any guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily reflect views of Dr. Schloss or the views of Project I Am.
Diane, I want to thank you so much for being here today and for this incredible opportunity to do the post-mortem of an affair and the recovery process and all that it cost you and Jack in your relationship. Tell me a little bit about why this project and this discussion is important to you.
So I think the biggest thing for me is allowing people to understand that an affair, no matter how tragic it seems, can be overcome, and there is recovery on the other side if you want to put in the work, and to just, you know, really look inwards and understand that recovery is possible.
I think you hit on something really key there, doing the work. A lot of people maybe aren't always willing to do the work or pay the price because it is hard work and it does cost you sacrifice. It's painful. And sometimes the pain seems insurmountable. It requires courage to go there. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But I've had the opportunity to sit with you and Jack and to know you guys some and be a witness of this incredible journey that the two of you have been on. Tell me a little bit about the background of this relationship that is going to help inform the listeners as they understand who you are and how you guys got together, what happened, and how you recovered.
Yes. Thanks. I guess to understand, we have to go back a while. We've been together since we were 16 years old, pretty much our entire lives. And we grew up together. We went through a lot together. His parents got divorced when he was a little bit older. My parents were already divorced. So we come from a long line of divorced family. I always knew I wanted to break that cycle. And so did Jack. And that was something we talked about a lot, was if we are going to be together, we're going to make it work and we're going to stay together. And as we grew together, we understood the work that had to be put in, but we also thought that just liking each other and being there for each other was enough. Fast forward, we grew up, got married, had careers, did all the things, had three children together. And in that process, we kind of lost our way. what was interesting was through all of it, we still were best friends. We still liked each other a lot, but we were going through the motions. We weren't sharing like the passion. We weren't being appreciative of each other. That was really one of the main points. We just started to take each other for granted because we had always been there for each other, that it became easy just to say, well, you're always going to be here. And that's what it is.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. I think you raised something that is really important, is the friendship, the flame of passion and appreciating each other can be stirred up and like a tide comes and goes. But when there's friendship as a foundation, it leaves something to build on. And when everything else disappears, that's still there. I think a lot of couples don't have that. In us chatting prior to this, one of the things that you mentioned was that you were a witness to your father's affairs and this impacting your mother, her having a breakdown, and you having to keep it from your younger siblings. And then you also mentioned earlier that the way you grew up and the way all of this impacted you was this idea that people get married and then they get divorced, and almost that being your expectation, but making a choice to break those generational cycles, and you and Jack deciding that even though this had happened in both of your families, this was going to be different for you and for your kids.
Yeah, I think we were both very cognizant of the fact that we had come from these broken homes, and having grown up and being witness to my father cheating on my mother, and then I kind of discovered it. Well, my mother was discovering it, and it goes, you know, pretty deep. But carrying that weight and seeing how my mother broke down and what she went through during that time. And I really, you know, they ended up divorced, obviously, but it's something that she really never got over and that she carries with her. And because of that, I had this voice in my head telling me, don't trust anyone, don't trust men. With Jack, he was able to build that trust with me because we knew each other so well and because we had this respect for one another. I just always thought he wouldn't ever cheat on me.
Absolutely. Both of you being aware of the pain of it and how it impacts people around you, I can understand how you would think that this would never be an option. But we get caught unawares so often. I'm aware that you and Jack were the power couple. In the city that you were living in, you facilitated friendships, birthdays, and celebratory occasions and hosted people all the time. And you are both high performing in your individual fields.
I think around that, that's where a lot of the resentment built from, because Jack was very focused on his career. I wanted to support that because he was building a life for us and working hard to provide for me and our children. But on the other hand, I felt like that was all he was caring about. And then with friends and with family, we were always the hub. We were always hosting. We were always doing. And then he started to build resentment because he's like, you know, you can make time and do all these things for all these other people, but you're not giving me that same respect. And then I felt that way as well. And we were kind of caught in this vicious cycle of you're doing this and you're doing this, but then not talking about it with each other. Which was a bit ironic because we would talk a lot, and it wasn't that we weren't communicating, but we weren't getting down to the root of the issue. We were just brushing the surface and dealing with getting through the days with the kids and everyday life. Inside, both of us were holding on to anger and resentment, letting it fester and not saying anything. Then it would sometimes come to a head and we'd have a blowout and make up and it would seem to be resolved. In my mind, we never fought a lot, so when we'd have these blowouts and talk about it, I thought, okay, everything's okay. We've got everything out on the table and we're okay. But in his mind, it wasn't really resolved. And it's very easy to get caught in this rhythm.
Absolutely. Resentment is one of those things that can build over time unless we really do the work to let go, to forgive, and to do the hard work. There are so many other factors that impact relationships. You guys had just had a third kid. Jack was working really hard, establishing his career and providing for you guys as a family. You were this hub to a community constantly hosting and serving the people around you. And then COVID had also just happened or was happening. There are other factors as well that impacted things.
Me becoming pregnant with our third was definitely a point of contention. I wanted a third very badly. He was more on the fence about it. I got pregnant. He felt like I had tricked him. That was never my intention at all. He was very upset about it. He thought I was just taking advantage and doing what I wanted to do rather than thinking about him, which was part of a bigger issue. So he looked at it like, she's always going to do what she wants to do and never consider me.
Mm-hmm.
And that created a lot of anger. In turn, he turned to one of our friends who was in this group. From my understanding, it started off innocently enough. Because we were all in this group, always talking and always together, I never thought anything of them texting each other, exchanging messages. But in the back of his mind, he was justifying it with, Diane's never going to appreciate me. She's never going to make me feel the way that I want to feel, the way this other woman is making me feel.
Were there any warning signs or red flags that you see now but couldn't recognize at the time?
Yeah, I think there probably were. I was very consumed with the kids. And once COVID hit, everything was chaos. I was also concerned about pleasing everyone else. So because I was looking the other way, I didn't see what was right in front of my face. Them constantly talking to each other, texting, or he would make a plan to take one of our kids over to their house or meet up or drop them at the program and then hang out with Susan because that's, we have this, they're there, so I might as well take that time. Thinking back, it all makes sense. At the time, I was just like, okay, they're friends and he's trying to help me out. Now it all kind of clicks and like, okay, during that moment, they must have been doing this. And during this moment, they were doing that. And what's worse is it was all right under my nose. And then other people within the group found out about it. And then they were part of the lies. So it was just like, there was so much deception going on that now looking back, I was like, how did I not see it? But when you're so caught up in what's right in front of you, it's easy to look the other way.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, there was so much going on. There were needs that needed to be taken care of. The kids, you guys were both busy. He was busy at work. Your social circle was very active and there was a lot of trust. From what I understand, this is a really close, tight-knit group. And you guys lived in each other's pockets a lot. There was a lot of taking care of each other's kids. And when one of you was going through a hard time, jumping in and supporting each other, which makes the secret keeping and betrayal even more painful because you were such a tight-knit group of friends.
Yeah, for sure. It was extremely interconnected. And it wasn't just, he was off on a business trip and slept with some random woman in a bar. This was very deliberate. And it was not only a physical affair, it was an emotional affair. When it first came to light, he positioned it just as an emotional affair. But as we started to talk and realize we were going to try to work things out, it came out that it was physical. And I did, right from the beginning, believe that it had been physical. But the part that really hurt me was knowing how emotional it was and that he was relying on someone else to meet those emotional needs more than me and feeling more comfortable going to her than to me. And then it was also the fact that Susan's husband got wind of what was going on and was like, if you're happy doing this, then I'll just let it be, which in itself was
messed up. And also the fact that some of your closest friends at the moment knew about it, found out about it, and didn't step in and didn't protect you. And it raises these concerns regarding trust and people having your back.
Well, that was really hard. And the friends who didn't know, who were also part of the group, when they found out, they were extremely hurt because Jack was supposed to be my best friend. And Susan is also a very good friend. And now they're doing all this behind our backs, and I had no idea. So it was this tidal wave of destruction. It kept taking everyone out. It just, in one fell sweep, destroyed everything. And that's what I kept saying to him, was like, what were you thinking? You knew when this came to light that everything was going to implode. And he was just like, well, I just thought we would be together and everyone would come on board and be happy about it. And it was so delusional, because in what world is that going to be okay? And then it was also like, how could you not have thought about the kids? Because there was all these kids involved. And that was also one of the worst parts for me, because you didn't only do this to me, you did this to our kids. And that's something that Jack still carries with him and has a lot of guilt about. Through therapy, through everything that we've been through, we've come out the other side of it and realized these weren't the right people for us to be surrounding ourselves with and for our kids to be surrounding themselves with. So on that hand, we're lucky to have seen it and gone and out of the toxic situation. It's too bad that this is what it took to get us to where we are.
It was your whole world at the time. And there didn't seem a need to abandon those things, or that anything about the friendships was unhealthy.
Yeah, we definitely thought that this was a very healthy friendship and we had this village and relied on each other. The kids loved each other. So especially during COVID, when we kind of bubbled all together, and that was the whole world, right? We were only really seeing each other because you weren't allowed to see anyone else. We were very specific and like, okay, you're not seeing anyone else because you're seeing us. And if you do see other people, then we're not seeing you. Everyone was in there, you know, locked up at home. So we really made an effort to say, you know, we're only seeing each other for the health of the kids. But now I know it was not just for the health of the kids. It was so that Jack could see Susan.
Right. And I think what you mentioned earlier, the naivete and the selfishness that comes with this, everybody else will get on board. The kids will be fine, right? Just not thinking clearly in the midst of the craziness that happens in people's minds during those situations. I think the biggest thing is the self-deception, believing the lies you tell yourself or that Jack told himself during that time.
There was a lot going on with Jack at that time. I think he was dealing with some depression, or he was very much not himself. What led to that was all these things I talked about before. Instead of seeking help, and even there was time where I said to him, we need to go to couples therapy. And he was like, no, I don't want to do that. He turned to Susan. So he made the wrong choices, which is it. The whole thing was very out of character for him, because he's always been a very moral, ethical person. For him to set his whole life on fire for this person who also didn't have good intentions. She chose to be with him because she was unhappy in her marriage and dealing with a husband who had mental health issues and alcoholism. And so when Jack was giving her the attention she wasn't getting from anywhere else, and vice versa, it seemed to make sense to them. In their minds, they're like, oh, well, the kids already love each other. We'll just be one big happy family. So it wasn't just from Susan, but from some of the other friends. He would say, Diane doesn't appreciate me, or she's this and she's that. And they would be like, oh, yeah, she's terrible, because they wanted to be validated. They themselves didn't have healthy marriages. So it was easy to back him up. So when he's feeling validated from all these people, he's like, well, you know, she must be terrible. And instead of talking to me about it, he let that cycle keep perpetuating.
As I hear you say that, the thing that comes to mind for me is how painful it must be for you to hear that some of your closest friends were validating his shit talking about you. And you know, not trying to bring balance or different perspective, or even come alongside you in the midst of all of that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there were times where some of the girls would validate me and talk to me. I had friends who didn't know about the affair talking to me about what was going on in my marriage. But because there were people who knew and friends who were just on his side, it created this terrible dynamic. But at the time, that was our norm. And it was also because of all this going on and COVID and everything else, I was falling into depression and I didn't have the tools to deal with any of that. And I think that also played into why he was being validated. Like, none of these people had the tools to say, oh, maybe you should be going to therapy. Maybe instead of telling me how you feel, you should be telling your wife. They just resorted to, well, yeah, she's such a bitch.
Some of the things that are coming to mind for me are the role that you guys fill in this group as leaders or as people of affluence, as successful people, and with that comes a certain amount of power, and people maybe not wanting to rock the boat or push back on or interfere with a couple who, at the end of the day, they really benefited from knowing in a very materialistic kind of way.
Yeah, it's funny that you do say that, because looking back now, Jack does say Susan was very much in it for those benefits. She always lived beyond her means and tried to keep up with the Joneses and felt that he was going to provide that life for her. And he, at the time, fed into that.
How did you find out about the affair? And what was your immediate reaction in that moment?
Jack was on the phone in our room, and I heard him complaining about me and telling someone how he thought I was so depressed and he can't stand it. And he sees me moping around and didn't know that I had overheard. And I went downstairs and I waited for him to come down. When he came down, I said, if you have something to say, I'd rather you say it to my face than, you know, talk behind my back. He tried to deny it. I heard you. I know what you're saying. But as we started talking, he started by saying, I can't do this anymore. And I think that we need a break from each other. You're just so miserable. We're not where we used to be. And I don't think you love me anymore. I looked at him and I'm like, is there someone else? And I just knew in my gut. And he was like, that doesn't matter. And I said, well, yeah, it does matter. And he said, maybe there is. And if there is, we both deserve to be happy. And I said, well, I have a right to know this. And he said, yeah, there is. And then I said, who is it? And he said, Susan. And everything kind of went fuzzy. It's like just a complete shock. I just remember getting up and walking around and crying and screaming at him. And I left the house. I went somewhere. I came back. There was a lot of yelling and screaming and trying to understand what was going on. And I said, I'm leaving and you can be with the kids. I can't be near you. I went to my sister's and fell apart there. And there was like 2 days there where I just thought, okay, that's it. Our marriage is over. I wasn't talking to him and I was trying to figure everything out. My best friends came over and tried to come for me and my family. It was a shock to everyone. And he had to tell the rest of the friend group too. So, you know, everything came to light. There was so much impact at that time.
Absolutely. And I remember something that you mentioned was you saw your life playing out like your mom's.
Yes. As soon as it happened, I just thought, okay, that's it. I'm my mother now. I'm going to have to raise my kids in this co-parenting, whatever that's going to look like. I'm going to be on my own. I'm going to have to work my butt off. And I just saw misery and I didn't want to go down that road. It was beyond shock because I never imagined that he was capable of hurting me in that way. Also the rage against Susan because, you know, this was someone who was supposed to be one of my best friends who was also able to do this to me.
How did this impact your self-esteem, your trust, your sense of security in the relationship?
I think everything was just ripped down to nothing. I had no self-esteem. I just thought that I must have been a terrible person for him and for her to have done this to me. That in some way I must have deserved it. I felt unattractive. I felt completely like a shell. There was a lot of humiliation and there was a lot of anger because everyone within the friend group who didn't know was like, how did this go on behind our back also? How did no one put this together. The people who did know, right, there was one woman who knew and kind of told her husband, and that created issues because he was upset that she had known. There was a lot of backlash.
I remember you guys still showing up at events or at family or friends functions, and the whole idea of walking into a room and the feeling that everybody in the room knew what had happened and the feelings that brought up, because I think it's easy afterwards to want to hide and run away and isolate. But there were still things that you had to participate in, and you did really courageously. How were you able to do that in the midst of all the feelings that were coming up for you during that time?
Honestly, I just had to put the kids first, and that was really difficult. The kids had programs and things they were doing, and I didn't want the kids to know anything was going on. We told the kids there had been a fight and we weren't really talking anymore. They were young enough that they didn't ask a lot of questions, but I would just show up. And a lot of the times I would bring a friend or a family member with me, so I had some support, and I would just walk in and not even look at them. For a long time, Jack didn't go to things and Susan didn't go to things. It was only me taking the kids or getting someone else to take them because I couldn't be in the same room as her and I didn't want him in the same room as her. So it wasn't only that. It was that quickly this spread through the community. So it wasn't just our immediate friends that knew. It was the whole community. So any room I walked into, it was like, oh, there's Diane. Jack cheated on her with her best friend, Susan. And somehow they're all still together.
A few things come to mind for me. One is that hard work that it requires for you to still show up and hold your head high and walk with dignity in the midst of people whispering and having opinions, aware of the looks or the chatter in the room, that requires remarkable courage. Also, the judgment from people with regards to you not leaving, the judgment regards to your willingness to do the work and stay in the relationship.
Yeah, there was judgment from people who I didn't expect to get judgment from. And then there was also support from people who I didn't necessarily think I'd get support from. So it was kind of interesting to see where friends and family stood and who was able to say, I'm going to support you in whatever decision you make, as long as you're happy, and who made it about themselves.
Sometimes what happens in those situations, from what I've noticed, is there are other people who can't handle the truth or the reality of what we're going through. They make it about them because of unresolved issues in their own lives and a lack of willingness to look at it. And so instead of them showing up and supporting, they withdraw or cast judgment on our decision to stay in a relationship because of their own stuff, and actually has very little to do with you.
100%. An affair is something that's so easy to judge, but there's other things that people are willing to forgive and understand that you're going to work through. But as soon as someone hears, you know, cheating or affair, they're like, oh no, that's unforgivable. What about all the other things that couples do to one another to hurt each other? Why is one more forgivable than another?
Who were you able to turn to during this time, and how did their response to you influence your perspective or the decisions that you ended up making?
Yeah, so definitely there was some friends who I spoke to a lot, but what really helped me was talking to people who had been in similar situations. And during that time, I was very fortunate to have a friend who had gone through something similar, and she mentors women who are going through, like I said, mentored women after affairs. So I was able to talk to her, and the best piece of advice she gave to me was, you know, don't make any permanent decisions when you're in this state. Take some time, take 6 months, take a year, and live together, but also do things for yourself and work on yourself and let him work on himself and go to couples therapy. You've given each other so much of your lives that you can give each other that. when Jack and I eventually did come back together to talk after some time apart, I said to him, this is what I think we should do. And he said, I'm willing to go to couples therapy. I'm not making any promises. And I said, I'm not making any promises either. I didn't know at the time if I was ever going to be able to get over it. And it's interesting because we were kind of dancing around that we were both afraid of the other one leaving for a long time. But it became, you know, this understanding that we were giving each other space and time before we made a decision.
That sounds like a wise thing to do. I can imagine it would have been easier to make a quick decision and protect yourself rather than doing the hard work of staying in it before you made a decision.
It was definitely a very difficult time. Just knowing that we didn't have that pressure helped us take some space.
You wrote something that I want to read, if that's okay. You said, know when you have a really vivid dream and you wake up and go about your life, but then something happens and you think of that dream and you're not really sure if it was real or not. That's how I feel when I look back on that time in my life. It feels like a bad dream, like I was going through my life in this haze and then someone splashed cold water on me and I woke up and realized what needed to be done to save myself and my family. You remember writing that?
Yeah. Because when I was looking back and thinking about all this, that's the best way that I can explain it. Looking back now, it all just feels like it happened almost to someone else. I know it happened to me because I'm so changed from it, but it also feels like a completely different person, a completely different life. And in a way, I can't believe how I was just going through the motions and living my life with this film over everything and not seeing things for what they were and not living in the moment.
Yeah, I'm so encouraged and amazed by the change in your life between then and now. At what point did you realize reconciliation was possible? Was there a particular turning point or a moment you remember?
Starting couples therapy was definitely the catalyst because he did agree to that. And my therapist, who was also amazing at the time and helped me through a lot, recommended our couples therapist. And he was very pro staying together. But he also said, if this doesn't work out and I don't think that you're going to be able to get through, then I will help you separate amicably. So we knew there were options, but we just kind of said, okay, we're going to try and make this work for our kids, for our family, and for each other. But we also both deserve to be happy. And if we can't find that happiness together, then we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. We slowly kind of started dating each other again and spending time together. The first month or so, I just remember sitting on the couch every night and rehashing everything and trying to understand how he did what he did and how it all came to be and with the parts that everyone played in it. And it just, there was a lot of crying and hurt and just a lot of conversations, but it all needed to come out. And I think for the first time in a long time, we were brutally honest with each other, which did help a lot. And then slowly we started to rebuild from that brick by brick, realizing the work that we had to do and continue to do. We would slowly get to where we needed to be. And during that time, other things started happening outside of us that made us come together, whether it was something with the kids or with other family members. But you just realize that there is that bond and there is a reason that we chose each other.
One point you said was, I think we were both hesitant and waiting for the other one to say that they were leaving or couldn't do it anymore. But in that fear, you realized that you really didn't want to lose each other. One of the things that I think couples struggle after infidelity is the rebuilding of trust. And I remember something Esther Perel said regarding rebuilding trust after infidelity. And it was something to the effect that people can't earn our trust again. We have to choose to give it. Tell me about rebuilding trust in the relationship and what that looked like for the two of you.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So again, a lot of therapy help understanding why he made the choices that he made and what choices he was going to make going forward and what choices I was going to make going forward. Getting those tools through therapy to understand that if we continue using them, then we won't get back to the place that we were before. And then for us, it was also the understanding that this affair wasn't just about the sex. It was much deeper than that. It was the validation and the feelings and both of us being seen and appreciated. And I wasn't giving it to him. He wasn't giving it to me. We were both withholding because we were blaming the other person. So we were stuck in this cycle. And looking back, one of us had just kind of stepped back and been like, oh, I can break the cycle by just telling the other person, oh, you look really nice today, giving them a kiss or doing something to show that you appreciate each other. Maybe we could have gotten off of that merry-go-round, but neither one of us had those tools to know that's what we needed to do.
And as you rebuild emotional intimacy, the riskiness of it is I'm opening my heart again to this person and I'm risking getting hurt again. And as human beings, we have this thing where when we're hurt, we want to protect ourselves and to survive. It would be a lot easier sometimes to just block our heart off from the other person and not open it to them again. Were there any specific conversations or actions that helped restore emotional intimacy for the two of you?
Going back to what you were just saying, I remember one of the friends from the group saying to me, he's going to do this to you again. And that really kind of sticking in my head. And I'm like, why does he believe that? When I told Jack this at the time, and he's like, the fact that he would even say that goes to prove how much he didn't actually know me.
Mm.
As if he had taken the time to understand me and know why I made these choices, then he wouldn't be saying it. So there's so much underlying. I'm sure there are people out there who are perpetual cheaters, and it is about the sex. That's another issue that they need to work on. But for us, there was so many layers. It was just like one big onion that needed to be peeled. As we worked through each layer, we came to understand each other better and were able to build up that intimacy, being that vulnerable with each other again and having these really honest conversations would allow us to get to know each other again. And I saw what he was capable of and he saw what I was capable of because, you know, the affair was his actions, but there was things that I was doing that I needed to be accountable for. And at no point did I say, I'm taking responsibility for you making these choices, but I will take responsibility for what's gone on in our marriage.
Diane, as we talk about this, one of the things that comes up for me as I'm listening to your responses and I'm thinking about our listeners, where a lot of listeners to this particular podcast would call out things like how interesting it is that you, the offended party in this, even though you both contributed, that you're the one having this discussion with me. And maybe one of their concerns might be, I hear that she's doing all the work, but did he really take accountability for his actions? And so my question is, how did Jack take accountability for his actions and how did that impact the healing process?
So that's a completely valid thought and concern because it was very much my concern, want to move forward and not repeat this. And I knew he loved me. And I knew that he didn't want to hurt me. And I had to believe that and trust in that somewhat. But I also had to see him doing the work. And every time we'd go to therapy and every time he'd meet with his therapist and every time we'd have a conversation, I saw him taking accountability and responsibility. He had a lot of hard conversations with a lot of people because he had to take responsibility. He spoke to every member of my family. He spoke to other good friends. And every conversation he had, he said, this was on me. This is a choice that I made. And I know I'm responsible for this. It's the worst thing I've ever done. And I will have to live with that forever. And he still will apologize for it to this day. And I know that he's sorry, but sorry only takes you so far. It's putting in the work to show that you're actually accountable and that you want to make things right.
So with all of that work, your entire life imploded. You guys made a decision to work on it together, to not make a decision for 6 months and to work on yourselves. As that happened, you began to rebuild intimacy, emotional intimacy, and trust. At this moment in time, how long has it been since the implosion of everything because of the affair?
Yeah, so it's been over 3 years now. Some days it feels like it wasn't that long ago, and other days it feels like it was a lifetime ago, but it all kind of feels like a bad dream because our marriage is so completely different now. And I think we're very different now. Through therapy and through the work that we've done, both separately and together, we now understand ourselves better and we understand one another better. So we're able to actually look at each other in a completely different light. And we have this kind of marriage that I always wanted to have. I always said, I want my kids to look at mom and dad and be like, oh, they're so gross. They're always hugging each other, kissing each other. And to grow up and say, my parents always loved each other. And now I feel like I have that. We show each other a lot of respect and appreciation, whether it's behind closed doors or in front of the kids or in front of other people. And we just know that we can't take each other for granted anymore. We still go to couples therapy. We still do individual therapy. It's not something that's just going to magically stay this way unless we're continuously putting in the work. It is a lot easier now because we have this newfound respect for each other.
What practical changes did you both make to ensure a healthier, stronger relationship?
The biggest thing was, for a long time, we were putting each other very low on our priority list. Now, we definitely put each other first. You know, we consider each other first. Our marriage comes really before anything, our marriage and our kids. And we were letting so much get in the way of that. You know, being the people pleaser that I am, looking back now, I saw the way that was getting in front of my marriage. And it just kept pushing our relationship to the back burner. Now, I would never let that happen again. So we've made so many decisions over the last 3 years that have put the family first. And then just learning how to set boundaries, that was something I really struggled with, both of us, because we've always been the leaders of our families and our friend groups. And now saying, no, we're not hosting this, or no, we're not going to this event because we are spending time together. We're spending time just as a family. And that's been a big change. Also, making sure that we're constantly making time for each other and telling each other how we feel. We never go to bed without saying goodnight and I love you and giving each other a kiss. We hug and kiss first thing in the morning. We're always very cognizant of each other, and we want to be, right? Like we want to be affectionate towards each other. We want to be near each other. And that's something that was missing for a long time.
You also mentioned some other safeguards or boundaries that you put into place to protect your marriage. Tell me about some of those.
I think the biggest one right now was we moved to a new city. So that was a big change for us and something that probably I would never have been able to do 3 years ago, because I wouldn't have been able to say to the rest of the people in my life, putting my family first and making this decision. But then also like giving each other space to have our own interests and our own hobbies. So no matter what it is, just saying, okay, that's fine. You're going to go to the gym now, or you're going out with some friends, and we have to have our own lives, but then also always kind of coming back together. And then just not letting things fester and continuously talking to each other. If we see something's bothering the other person, we talk about it immediately. We don't let it sit under the surface. Jack is very good at bringing that out of me because I tend to hold things back and think on things a lot more, where he's just very kind of black and white. And I'm very into like more processing my feelings and thinking about what things mean. And he's like, I see you're upset. What's going on? And I'm like, oh yeah, maybe I am upset and we should talk about this. He sees it in me before I have even processed that I'm upset about something. and just having respect for one another and just constantly, like, we speak very highly of one another. We don't put each other down in front of the kids, family members, friends. We want our kids to see that we have respect for each other.
I think that's great. I love the things that you are implementing and not letting things simmer beneath the surface, venting and talking them through. All those things that you're putting in place. You mentioned that it's been 3 years. It would be naive for any of us to think that there aren't still triggers that show up. Even this conversation, you and I chatting about this right now, is certainly triggering, I'm sure. How do you handle triggering moments or memories, intrusive thoughts as they come up? How do you deal with painful memories when they resurface?
I think it's very dependent on what's happening in that moment. There's times where I have to walk away and process. There's times where we're out as a family and something comes up and I just have to not let this bother me. For me, it's really been taking control of my thoughts and knowing that I control the negative space in my head. And also being able to talk to Jack and say, this happened today and I was really triggered by it. And then he validates that. He doesn't say, oh, you're crazy or don't think about that. Instead, he's like, I understand. And, you know, why was this triggering? And because of that, we're able to move on. At the beginning, everything was triggering and there was a lot of journaling happening, walks by myself. And sometimes I would just have to get in the car and blast my music and let it all out. Now, thankfully, those times aren't very often because I'm able to look at Jack and know he's choosing me and our marriage is strong. Those triggers don't really matter so much anymore.
What advice would you give a couple? What would you say to a man or a woman who is currently dealing with a spouse's infidelity?
Every situation is obviously unique, but I think listening really to your heart and your gut and just asking yourself if you want to put in the work, if you're willing to put in the work, if you are willing to do it, then change is possible. Many people are willing to give up and say, we'll get divorced and I'll try again with someone else. The grass is green where you water it. It's not going to be better with someone else, especially in our case. It was a lot of issues that we were dealing with internally, and those would just carry to the next relationship. I think you have to remember why you chose each other in the first place, why you've built this life together, and really work on rebuilding the trust and intimacy, understanding the choices you've made, and then putting in the work. But you have to ask yourself if you're willing to do that, because if you're not, you can't just say, okay, I'm going to put a Band-Aid on it, because it's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole.
What do you wish you had known earlier in the healing process?
I wish I would have known that it was going to be okay. You know, it would have been nice to have a crystal ball, but I think just to know that there is steps to recovery, and if I trust the process and trust myself, then life will be good. And really, if I can just go back and tell my old self, I would say, trust the process and your life is going to be all that you dreamed it to be and more.
I remember in some notes that you and I have written together, one of the things that you advise couples is therapy. Go to therapy, talk to someone, speak the stuff out loud, let it out. Therapy is so beneficial, not just if something's wrong, but it's just beneficial and everybody should have it. And I totally agree. Sometimes therapy is to fix something, but sometimes it's like taking vitamin D. It's just good for us.
Yeah, I tell everyone, I have so many friends that I see the little cracks in their lives or in the relationships forming. And I'll say, it would really be beneficial for you guys to go to couples therapy. And they're like, oh no, we don't need that. And like, you'd be surprised. Sometimes you think you don't need it. If we had gone to couples therapy 5-6 years ago, then we wouldn't have been where we were. We didn't have the tools. Therapy will give you those tools so that you don't allow those cracks to expand and get bigger, because that's what will happen. If you don't know how to fix things, it's just going to keep cracking. And eventually it's going to be too much. It's going to be in too many pieces. You're not going to be able to put it back together.
That's great advice. And not just because I'm a therapist, but I do think it's true. I think everybody should go to therapy, which is why I do as well. One of the things that comes up after an affair, whether couples choose to stay together or not, is this issue of forgiveness. What does forgiveness mean to you? And how does somebody get there, if at all?
Yeah, forgiveness is a hard concept because it means something different to everyone. But for me, forgiveness was moving forward and not looking back and rehashing it. I remember someone said, if you're going to stay together, you can't continuously throw it in his face. That stuck with me. If I keep bringing it up and keep saying, you made this bad choice, what's that going to do? It's not getting us any further. I don't believe in forgive and forget, because if you forget, then you don't remember how you got to where you were. But keep going forward, because you're on this journey, you're on this path, and you know you want to keep going forward, but you sometimes have to look back to where you came from and say, like, have I forgiven him? Is there complete forgiveness? I don't know. I don't know if there'll ever be complete forgiveness, because a part of me was really broken from that. But it's like we were talking about with the cracks. It's a broken vase. It's been put back together. It's still beautiful. But the question is the vase as beautiful as it was before? Or maybe it's more beautiful than it was.
I love that whole Japanese concept when vases are fixed with gold and once repaired, that it has so much greater value.
Yes. Yeah. And I believe that in this case.
Diane, you've been through this incredible journey, and I have a few thoughts. One is that you spoke about each of you working on yourselves, having agency, living a full life individually so that you can live a full life together. And it reminds me that relationships aren't like math. A half plus a half in math makes a whole, but a half a person plus a half a person makes a half a relationship. The whole person plus a whole person makes a whole and healthy relationship. How would you define love and commitment after everything that you've been through?
To me, commitment is choosing your spouse every single day and not taking that for granted. So just constantly making that choice, waking up every day and saying, I choose you, and wanting to choose that person and make that commitment over and over again with a full heart.
I think that's beautiful for you and your growth. Just based on this interview and some of the stuff you've shared, you choosing your spouse has also required you choosing yourself.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it has. And in a lot of ways it's been hard for other people in my life to understand that, because I've always put myself last. And I think for the first time in my life, I'm really putting myself and my family first. That was also a point of contention in our marriage, putting everyone else first and him not having respect for me for never choosing myself and never setting those boundaries. He was hurt for me, not just for our family, but he would get angry for me that I was getting walked over by people who were supposed to love and care for me. Now that I'm able to set those boundaries, it creates space for my marriage.
This has been such a interesting and beautiful time. And I want to say, Diane, that it has been a significant privilege for me to be a witness on this journey that you and Jack have been on together and see the hard work and the growth that has happened in you guys individually as well as in your relationship, and to hear the joy that is happening in your life because of that hard work and your commitment to each other. So thank you so much for that. And thank you for this time together. Thank you for your vulnerability and the courage to suggest this podcast episode on this particular topic, to initiate it, follow through with it, and show up as courageously and transparently as you have. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me the space and for being there along this journey and inviting me on here today. Hopefully it will help someone.
I think this is something that doesn't often get spoken about. I think there are a lot of people out there who could never imagine this happening to them. And maybe listening to this, they'll see some red flags in their own lives and do the preemptive work to keep it from happening.
life is never going to be easy, and you need the downs to appreciate the ups. Our couples therapist always says, if you hadn't gone through what you went through, would you be living in Florida? Would you be doing all the things that you're doing today? Honestly, I don't know the answer. Probably not. But maybe something had to have happened to push us off the cliff. Our marriage was at the edge of the cliff, and it was going to take something to push us off. And either we were going to climb back out and make ourselves stronger, or we were just going to lie there and die.
Thank you for being with us today on Project I Am. I'm so glad that you're here. If you know a friend or somebody who would benefit from hearing this episode, please forward it to them or even leave a review. Until next time, this is Dr. David Schloss with Project I Am. May you be well.
The weather today will be glorious. Put on your sunglasses, sunscreen, and sun smiles. You're going to love it.